You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to a fresh new episode of Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, and this is the show where you get an inside look at everything going on with your favorite basketball team. Today's show is brought to you courtesy of SeatGeek. Download their mobile app for the easiest way to buy NBA tickets, and if you use the promo code LORockets, that's all one word, no spacing, you can get a $20 rebate on your first purchase at SeatGeek. So as we chat on this Tuesday evening, I'll start by saying that finally things are back and rolling at Toyota Center. We last chatted after Saturday night's game. Rockets lost in double overtime to the Grizzlies. And if you had to sum up that game in two words, it'd be jet lag. Really, that simple. The Rockets had been in China for 8 days. They flew back on Thursday. And for the veteran players, those that logged a lot of minutes in China, guys like James Harden, Trevor Ariza, Ryan Anderson, Corey Brewer, Nene, those guys, none of them had their usual legs or lift on Saturday evening. Now, they were able to challenge the Grizzlies because of quality contributions from young guys like Sam Decker and Montrezl Harrell, guys that maybe didn't play as much in China, also younger guys. Young legs always respond better to that kind of stuff. But certainly it was a game when the Rockets were still feeling the effects from that week plus in China. A lot of people around the Rockets told me they were still waking up at 2 and 3 a.m. every morning as they tried to adjust their bodies back to living in the United States. So after that game on Saturday, the Rockets largely went dark. There was no practice on Sunday. There was also no practice on Monday. They didn't give us a reason, but I think it's pretty obvious. They wanted these players to go home, rest, get their bodies and minds right, and report back on Tuesday, getting ready for the final stretch of the preseason for the regular season finally begins a week from this Wednesday, next week in Los Angeles. And when the Rockets reported back to Toyota Center for practice on Tuesday, the main news we heard was that the Rockets officially, they're not counting on Pat Beverley to be ready for the regular season opener. Now, to be clear, they're not declaring him out, but this is definitely a big change in the last few days. I'm going to recap what we've heard about Beverley. It started Tuesday, October 4th. Right before the game with the Knicks, we heard that he had basically just knee irritation, soreness. He sat out that game. It was described as precautionary. Also didn't make the trip to China, but that was also described as precautionary as well because, well, why would you put someone through that kind of grind, traveling 15-plus hours in a plane, living halfway around the world, just for a couple of preseason games, especially if you know you have any injury at all or may not play? There's just no point to doing that. So the expectation among everyone that covered the Rockets, myself included, was that when they got back to Houston that following Friday, 10 days later, Beverley would be practicing and ready to go. And it's not that Beverley was in hiding. We've seen him at practice. He's been, you know, dressed out and he's been riding the bike, but he's not practicing. And he did not play on Saturday night against the Grizzlies, and it doesn't look like he's going to play in either of the two final preseason games this week against the Mavs and the Spurs. Now, again, all we know, left knee irritation. I wish we knew more, but that's all they've said thus far. As I pointed out before, this is not the troublesome right knee where he had the meniscus issue 2.5 years ago that was never repaired. So it's not a chronic issue that we're aware of. But at this point, if he misses the regular season opener, on October 26th, that's more than 3 weeks from Tuesday the 4th, which is when we first heard about the injury. So if you're talking about an injury that's 3+ weeks, including missing regular season time, that's not just irritation. There's something structurally going on in there, and hopefully we learn more in the coming days. D'Antoni mentioned today that Pat has more doctor's appointments and that maybe by the end of the week we'll get more of a precise timetable. The last we heard from D'Antoni before the Memphis game, he said he was thinking a week or two, which would put him right around the start of the regular season. It's not that the Rockets have ruled him out, but they're certainly acknowledging the possibility that maybe he's not ready by then, and hopefully by the end of this week, we'll have more clarity, not just about his timetable, but also exactly what the injury is. Now, in the absence of Pat Beverley, it's put the Rockets and Mike D'Antoni in a bit of a tough spot. The first game he missed, first two games, actually, they started Eric Gordon. And that's something that a lot of people expected because Gordon is really a combo guard. He can handle the ball just fine. There were some people that thought after the Rockets signed him from New Orleans that Gordon and Harden would be the starting backcourt, but the Rockets said that they wanted Beverly in there for defense and that Gordon was the ideal sixth man. So they went with Eric Gordon the first two games, and it worked very well offensively. Gordon's played relatively well for most of the preseason, but where they ran into some issues was on the defensive end of the court. That third game, the second with Gordon as a starter, in which the Rockets played the Pelicans in China, they gave up 117 points, and really the defense suffered because to me it looked like there wasn't anyone who could check point guards. Both Eric Gordon and James Harden, you know, Harden might be the point guard on offense, as D'Antoni's labeled him, but they are both shooting guards by size and especially on the defensive end of the floor. Neither guy has the lateral quickness to guard one of these quick, undersized, probing point guards. So after those two games, the Rockets switched their starting lineups for games 4 and 5 of the preseason with Harden as the point guard, but instead of Gordon starting alongside him, they started KJ McDaniels. Now, McDaniels is more athletic than Gordon. He's a little quicker. He gives you more range and speed to potentially guard point guards. And we did see McDaniels checking Memphis's Mike Conley a decent bit on Saturday. But the problem was that when the Rockets did that, they found that they did not have a secondary ball handler after James Harden. So Memphis did a lot of trapping, a lot of full court press, and it did cause some early turnovers, really, until the Rockets got Gordon in the game, because Memphis forced the ball out of James Harden's hands, and no one else on the floor was really capable of bringing the ball up without being a walking turnover hazard. KJ McDaniels, Trevor Ariza, Ryan Anderson, these are not guys that you want bringing the ball up the floor and initiating your offense. So really, the Rockets are in a bit of a tough spot. Do they start Gordon and sacrifice a little defensively, or do they start McDaniels and sacrifice a little bit on the ball handling end? It's not an easy decision. Now, one thing I want to make clear, the Rockets have not said that they view these as the deficiencies of either starting Gordon or starting McDaniels. This is my analysis. All we've heard from the Rockets, and Mike D'Antoni specifically, when they made the change to McDaniels as the starter, was that they wanted Gordon to go back to the role that he'd be in for most of the season when Pat Beverly is playing. And basically, D'Antoni was saying he's going to be the sixth man when Beverly is ready to go, so let's just keep him in that sixth man role and let him get comfortable. And when D'Antoni made that announcement, all of us were under the impression that certainly Beverly would be ready to go by the regular season opener. That's a little different now. For the first time, they're acknowledging the possibility that Pat Beverly is not going to be ready to go in the regular season. So I'm going to be very intrigued to see what the Rockets do when they take on the Dallas Mavericks in Dallas on Wednesday night. Knowing that Pat Beverly might not be ready for, you know, the first few games of the regular season, do they still put Gordon in his role preparing for life with Pat Beverly? Or do they say, you know what, we need that secondary ball handler. We don't know exactly when Pat's going to be back. So we need someone else who can bring the ball up the floor along with James Harden. It's going to be very interesting to see if there's an adjustment, because certainly Rick Carlisle, the coach of Dallas, is the kind of guy that can exploit whatever your mismatch is. I would really call Carlisle one of the best X's and O's coaches in the entire NBA, maybe the best. And it's going to be really interesting to see what happens, because the Rockets are going to see a ton of Rick Carlisle and the Mavs over the next 10 days. It's not just the preseason game tomorrow night. Game 2 and Game 3 of the regular season, first in Dallas, second in Houston. It's a home-and-home between the Rockets and the Mavs. And again, they've got a decent bit of options in Dallas. You know, Deron Williams is more of a traditional point guard. They have J.J. Barea, who's more of a penetrator, the type of guy that might give Eric Gordon or James Harden some trouble. Barea has certainly given the Rockets fits over the years, been a nightmare matchup for several years running. They also have Seth Curry, who's had a very good preseason. Of course, he's more of a two-guard than a one, but he certainly can play both positions and a great shooter. So there's a lot of options the Mavs can throw at them, and I'm going to be intrigued to see just how the Rockets decide to match up with them in the absence of Pat Beverly, because it's a game where the Rockets may want to learn a lot tomorrow night, because really the teams that the Rockets and Mavs put on the floor tomorrow night, it's going to be very similar to what they put out in Game 2 and Game 3 of the actual season. So I think you may see both coaches, but especially Mike D'Antoni, with Beverly's situation in flux, trying to find out some things before the games really matter starting next week. Now, to talk more about that matchup, I'm going to be joined momentarily by Mike Marshall. He works with 1310 Ticket in Dallas. He's also the host of Locked On Mavs, really good resource for Mavs information, and I want to hit him up for his thoughts on this matchup. But for now, I want to acknowledge our friends and sponsor at SeatGeek, because really, SeatGeek, it's the smartest, easiest way to find tickets if you want to go to either game like the Rockets and Mavs in Dallas or the Rockets home opener on Sunday, October 30th against the Mavs here in Houston. SeatGeek is a great resource for finding tickets in the secondary market. It's my favorite site of all of them out there. And if you want to catch one of those Rockets-Mavs games, or really any Rockets game early in the season, I would encourage you to go download that SeatGeek app. I have it on my phone, and, well, it's by far the easiest way that I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere doing anything with just a few taps. I can instantly find seats for really any game I want for the entire season. It's not just the NBA, but they've got good tickets for the Texans, U of H college football, pretty much anything you want, concerts included. You go to that SeatGeek app and you can find it very easily. They also grade the tickets from 1 to 100 on value, so you can pretty easily find any underpriced seats and get the best deal possible for your budget. But the best part of this SeatGeek sponsorship is that my listeners, all of you checking out Locked On Rockets, you can get a $20 rebate off of your first SeatGeek purchase. So if you want that $20 rebate on tickets, here's what you do. Download that SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, and click add a promo code. Then enter the promo code LORockets. That's all one word, no spacing. And after that, SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. You'll get that in the mail a few days afterward. So again, download that SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LORockets today. So with that said, I'm not going to delay any longer. I've got Mike Marshall on standby. Again, he's a great host and worker with 1310 The Ticket in Dallas, one of our counterpart sports radio stations up there. And he also is the host of Locked On Mavs. So give me one moment and we're going to get Mike connected right here on Locked On Rockets. Mike, how's it going today, man?
Doing awesome, man. Excited for, regular season being less than a week away. Some games to actually break down that aren't preseason variety.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to all that, man. How are you?
Pretty good. Getting ready for plenty of games between our respective teams, so to speak. Mm-hmm. First Mavs-Rockets preseason game tomorrow night in Dallas. More importantly, next weekend there's a home-and-home. Friday in Dallas, Sunday in Houston, games 2 and 3 of the regular season. So, Rockets and Mavs, always rivals, and definitely going to see a lot of each other over the next 10 days. As far as my main takeaways, I'm curious because the Mavs feel really different. Of course you've got Dirk and you've got Rick Carlisle. That's the core, and that's not going to change for... You know, even with Dirk getting towards 40, it feels like Dirk and Carlisle are the core for the foreseeable future. But as far as the new guys, Seth Curry, Harrison Barnes, Andrew Bogut, preseason, just looking at the numbers for me, it feels like Seth Curry's kind of been a pleasant surprise. Harrison Barnes has been a little flat. What's your assessment of how these new guys are playing?
Well, Seth Curry is going to be a fan favorite. Maybe from day one. He might already be, honestly, with his style of play and how his green light that he seems to have just whenever he touches the ball. He can create his own shots. They're running a bunch of flare screens for him. And, I mean, just quite honestly, the health of the two point guards that are in front of him on the depth chart and Deron Williams and J.J. Barea kind of lends itself for him to catch more minutes than you might have anticipated. So I think green light, thumbs up, whatever you want to say for Seth Curry. I love his game. I love the contract.
Yeah.
I wish they had more dudes like that. That's kind of something. That's kind of something Houston does, which is, you know, smart contracts like that. But
yeah.
Harrison Barnes, I've been pretty disappointed, man. And I got wind of it, I think, at Media Day, whenever I asked him, you know, Chandler Parsons ran a ton of pick-and-roll ball handler possessions over the last couple of years. So did Ray Felton. Both those dudes are gone. There's going to be this collection of possessions that are probably going to start with a pick-and-roll, and we need a ball handler for them. Is that going to be you? And he said, yeah, Rick's really strict about that. I don't know if I have the clearance to, you know, run pick and roll as a ball handler right now. And I'm like, okay, well, how the hell are they going to use you?
Yeah.
And so far I've seen a bunch of backdoor cuts, a bunch of, you know, running off screens and attacking the basket. And that's all good and fine for a, you know, your average 3-and-D type wing. The problem is you paid him 4 years, $94 million. Mm-hmm. He's probably the future of your franchise. So not that high on Harrison Barnes, quite honestly.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't think anybody expected huge things this season. I think the totals were going to be higher, but the percentages were going to be worse. And it was going to be an adjustment year. So I can't dock him too much for that. And then Bogut, I'm supremely excited about Bogut. It might be Bogut and then Seth Curry.
Yeah.
The two guys, and maybe Justin Anderson in terms of dudes that I just want to see play basketball this year. Because if Bogut's catching, you know, 25 minutes a game and it's contract year Bogut, and he plays, you know, up to his paper on the defensive end and just gives you a little bit offensively and sets some excellent screens and, you know, toughens the – just hardens the defense, no pun intended,
yeah.
altogether. I think you've got something that is better than people anticipated after, once again, failing in your free agent quest. And I wish they just stopped telling us who they're going after.
Yeah.
Just – if it doesn't work out, it's fine. If you don't tell me you're going after Hassan Whiteside and Mike Conley.
Right.
But by no fault of their own, they kind of landed on their feet with Bogut and Harrison Barnes.
And it's it's worth noting that, you know, with Bogut, the Rockets went after him too. You know, it came out after the fact that the Rockets basically offered the same deal that that Dallas did. But, of course, there's no love lost between Bogut and the Rockets organization. They've had plenty of run-ins with him in the playoffs the last 2 years, so I don't think, you know, Bogut was particularly fond of Houston, so...
Yeah, and the chance to start, you know what I mean? They clearly have invested in time and development in Clint Capella, but they don't want Bogut stopping his progress, so it makes a ton of sense on so many fronts that he would come to Dallas. Your team is shaken up quite a bit, more than it has over the last couple of years. I'm interested in, you know, Eric Gordon. I'm interested in Ryan Anderson and how you feel about those dudes and how much money they invested in them and just how they're going to work out on this, you know, Mike D'Antoni team.
Yeah, Anderson is going to get a pretty big challenge early with Dirk. That's what you want to see. You know, you've heard about Anderson for years. They've wanted a stretch four. They've made runs in the past at him and via trade. Of course, they had their ill-fated pursuits of Chris Bosh and LaMarcus Aldridge in free agency. But on the offensive end of the floor, I mean, Anderson's had moments this preseason where he just looks fantastic, where he can put up 20 points in about 6 minutes. It, you know, he can light it up. The concern with him is on the defensive end, and, you know, Dirk's the guy the Rockets have, you know, he's given them problems for over a decade now, and, you know, the best matchup for them has been maybe Trevor Ariza going small. That's when they've had their best success on Dirk, I feel like. Mm-hmm. But, who can Ryan Anderson guard? That's going to be a that's going to be the big question for him. I actually feel like if Anderson and Gordon are both healthy, I think Gordon's going to be the better player. Even though Anderson's paid $80 million and Gordon making $53 million over 4 years, Gordon's looked really good. We've heard good things about his health. He's a good secondary ball handler behind Harden. That's something they haven't really had the last couple of years, really since they lost Chandler Parsons to the Mavs 2 years ago. You know, that's the last time you had a secondary creator after Harden. Gordon's shooting the ball really well. It's one of those things you always have to knock on wood because Gordon's had a tendency, not just the chronic knee situations, but just the most random injuries of the world. You know, he was playing really well last year in New Orleans and he breaks a finger. So if he's healthy, I would actually think Gordon's the higher impact guy. I think Anderson... He fills a role because certainly in a Mike D'Antoni offense, you'd like to have a stretch four that can space and give the guards the room to operate that he wants. But he's got some pretty clear deficiencies on defense. And at this point in his career, it's certainly not like his athleticism is going to get better. So I just see, you know, I saw the signing of Anderson as something they had to do to basically counteract the narrative. Because I'm sure you guys in Dallas love hearing all the bad press out of Houston these past few months. And there was so much of a negative kind of stereotype surrounding the Rockets franchise, James Harden, that even though they knew they were overpaying for Ryan Anderson, I think it's something that they had to do just get someone on board, and then of course it led.
Sometimes you just need a win.
Yeah, I mean, they needed a free agent success story, so they got him. Also, by getting him, that's what cleared the decks to get Gordon, too. So I would say my expectations aren't too high for Ryan Anderson. I just see him as a 30 minutes per game stretch four. He's got his defensive limitations. Gordon, I'm a little more more bullish on because, to me, he can be that secondary creator on offense since that they haven't really had since losing Parsons 2 years ago.
And, are they going to start Gordon? I know Beverly's been out a little while.
Yeah, that's where I'm kind of curious to see, and that really ties into, you know, these first few matchups with the Mavs, because, yeah, Beverly, it's been really weird what's gone on with the Pat Beverly situation, because we first heard about it 2 weeks ago today, like Tuesday the 4th, they had a preseason game with the Knicks, and they announced right before the game that, you know, he just had a little bit of knee soreness, he was out as a precaution, and that he also wasn't going to take the trip to China. But again, they just framed it as purely precautionary. You know, there's no reason for a guy to travel halfway around the world for preseason games if he's got a nagging injury, yada, yada. And everybody just assumed that once the team got back to Houston, he'd be ready to go. Well, lo and behold, here we are. It's 2 weeks later. They've been back in Houston almost a week, and there's still no Pat Beverly. Now, they're not telling us what's going on. It's not like he's in hiding or something. Like, he's been at practice, you know, riding a bike and stuff like that. We just hear, you know, left knee irritation. But what's interesting about it is he's a really essential guy to what the Rockets want to do because he's really the only guy that can be a point guard on defense. You know, there's been a big deal calling James Harden the point guard of the team. D'Antoni's officially adopting that. But really, that's just on the offensive end of the floor. Defensively, Beverly is the only guy who can check those types of point guards. So what's gone on is that since Beverly's been out, they started Eric Gordon one game, and Gordon and Harden worked fine offensively. The problem was that neither of those guys are really laterally quick enough to guard, say, a J.J. Barea, someone that's really, you know, kind of quick off the dribble. Maybe Seth Curry, too, even. But you know what I'm saying? Like, these point guards that are just, you know, quick probing guys, they're just a little bit too... You know, I don't think Gordon's quick enough. Harden might can, but honestly, if you're asking Harden to check point guards, you're going to wear him down.
Yeah, he can't play that hard on both ends of the court.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're going to run Harden
Not being able to stop point guards like that can cause, like, critical mass failures on your defense.
Yeah.
Man, they need a solution for that.
And yeah. Sure, and
Beverly might be fine eventually, but that's going to be an issue.
And see, the issue, they saw this after that first game in New Orleans. That was by far the worst game the Rockets had defensively in the preseason, gave up like 117 points. So the next two games, they put Gordon back to his six-man role, and they started KJ McDaniels next to Harden. But what happened with that is that, you know, now Harden's your only ball handler on the floor. So when the Rockets played Memphis this past weekend, what Memphis did, they started doing full-court press, they trapped, and basically they got a ton of early turnovers because, quite frankly, they realized, you know what, if we force the ball out of Harden's hands, there's nobody who can bring the ball up the floor. So it's kind of like, you know, it's until Beverly gets back, it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation because you put in Gordon and you're sacrificing a little defensively. You put in McDaniels and you don't have a secondary ball handler. My guess as to what they do, I'm guessing they're just going to have to start Gordon and live with the defensive deficiencies because to me, you know, if you start Harden and then, you know, your other guys are KJ McDaniels, Trevor Ariza, and Ryan Anderson, a good X's and O's coach like Rick Carlisle is just going to, you know, trap the hell out of that lineup, and all of a sudden the Rockets are just going to be in a tough spot because, you know, Carlisle will just force somebody else to bring the ball up the floor.
Yeah, I think that's, if Beverly's not your starting point guard, I think that takes just being mediocre on defense completely off the table for that roster.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you can lean on Beverly, Ariza, and Capella and say they can make up for a lot of what the other two dudes will leave around the rim and even, you know, Ariza along the perimeter. But if you have to start Eric Gordon, I think you're already feeding into the narrative of this team is not going to pull their weight defensively, thus they don't have a chance to compete in the playoffs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's a completely different issue than the Mavs have. They're almost the complete opposite of they can't create their own shot consistently. Outside of Dirk, pick and pop. And defensively, I assume they'll be better. I mean, you put Harrison Barnes out there, who's a plus defender over Parsons, and has definitely more flexibility guarding the 2 through 4, and maybe even, you know, backup fives at times. And then Justin Anderson takes a step along, and then Bo gets back there. cleaning up anything else. So, like, as similar as they might end up in, or as similar as they did end up in record last year, one game difference, I think their styles are so, so complete polar opposites.
Yeah. And see, that's what I go back to when I think of, you know, when the Rockets have had trouble with the Mavs, and I'll go back to the most recent matchup. There was a big game down the stretch of the year in April, I'm sure you remember, that Dallas won by 2 points over the Rockets, up in Dallas. And the way it happened, it was a game in the 80s, and these last couple of years, especially with James Harden, the Rockets have more firepower. As you said, they've got more guys that can just create off the dribble. Well, I don't know if more in numbers, but, well, they have James Harden, and the Mavs don't really have anyone at that level offensively. So when the Mavs have had success, and I'll go back to the playoff series in 2015 as well, there was one notable exception, you know, game four, the one game the Mavs won in that series, yeah, they scored 130 points. But by and large, the last couple of years, when the Mavs have had success against the Rockets, Rick Carlisle's been able to muck it up. He's been able to just make it a slow, stagnant, half-court game. And the Rockets are a team, they don't really like to grind, so to speak. And it's been able to get the Rockets out of sorts. And my take on it, now some of it's going to change, because I thought last year, last year in the matchups, Rick Carlisle coached circles around J.B. Bickerstaff. I think J.B. might be a good coach in time, but certainly he was young and raw, and I thought Rick Carlisle just coached circles around him, especially in the more meaningful games late in the year. Mike D'Antoni, of course, is a lot more veteran, a lot more proven. However, my guess is that, when Carlisle draws up a game plan to, you know, defend or play against the Rockets, it's going to be pretty similar, because a Mike D'Antoni team, you know, they want to get up and down the floor, score a lot of points, make it a game of transition. And for the Mavs, I would think the goal is the same as when they took the court against the Rockets in April. Make it as slow and muck it up as you can. And, you know, when you've got these veterans like Dirk, like J.J. Barea, you may have a good opportunity to do it.
Yeah, they did that last year whenever Parsons went out with his knee injury.
Yep.
They slowed the pace down to just like a grinding halt, but it allowed them to execute more crisply on offense and actually make each possession more valuable. And it was weird to watch because, that's contrary to everything we've known from the Dallas Mavericks since basically Big Don Nelson all the way to now. But it works because they're veteran players and they have defensive flexibility now, even more than they did last year. The thing that interests me is thinking back to that playoff series you mentioned. In that playoff series, the Mavs got, just drug off the court a couple games, and it was because of the Rockets' insistence on figuring out who is Dirk guarding and initiating a pick and roll with that man, whether it be a four or five. Now, this year, it's going to be Ryan Anderson, and they don't have that that dearth of wing players that can initiate a pick and roll with, Josh Smith, even Dwight. All those guys. And it's going
to
be Ryan Anderson.
Terrence Jones, too. Terrence Jones, people love to make fun of him, but he had a big playoff series against Dallas.
No, I would have loved the Mavs to add Terrence Jones. Like, he can play a little bit. I have no problem with him off the bench. But it's going to be Ryan Anderson who Dirk is guarding. And that kind of cuts us loose a lot. You know what I mean? It gives us tons of leeway on the defensive end of the court in terms of whenever they play the Rockets. Of course, other teams might end up nuking that mismatch of whoever Dirk's guarding, but I look forward to that. I look forward to see what they do since they can't just pick at Dirk possession after possession.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean because, it's not that Dirk can't defend the stretch four, but a stationary stretch four like Ryan Anderson, it's a world's different level defending versus what the Rockets used to do to him, which was make him move. Because
it's turned into a foot race.
Yeah, Dirk is perfectly capable of going out to the three-point line and getting a hand in the face. Where Dirk had problems with the Rockets was that they would make him move laterally, switch, that kind of stuff. And with Ryan Anderson in the game, it's a lot simpler game plan for Dirk.
Yeah.
I would agree with that. What I think the Rockets might do, they are going incredibly small, which I think a lot of people saw that coming with Mike D'Antoni, but like right now in the preseason, Nene is technically the backup center enlisting, but they're also playing a lot of Montrezl Harrell. And their backup power forward right now, Mati Yunus, still isn't signed. I mean, he'll probably sign at some point, but who the hell knows what's going on with that. Right now, their backup power forward is Sam Dekker. So that's going to be one of those interesting things where I think the Mavs are a team that the Rockets are going to try to, beat with speed. Some of these quicker lineups with Dekker and Harrell up front. And it's just going to be a situation where, can you score offensively more than you give up defensively? Because, of course, Dekker and Harrell, you can present a lot of problems for Dirk in that way. Dekker is a good example of someone who might be able to, create in the pick and roll game because he's a creator, very athletic, that kind of stuff. But then you ask Dekker or Harrell to check Dirk on the other end of the floor, and it's going to get dicey. So it's a matter of, can you score enough to offset the defensive liability there?
I think for the first time in a long time, the Mavs could probably match small ball lineups like that with Justin Anderson sliding in at the three, bumping Barnes up to the four, and rolling Dwight Powell up there if you're playing, say, the Rockets. Some teams that might not work.
Yeah.
But I think that'll be the matchup that ends up. Mavs will adjust. They'll get Dirk off the court probably.
Yeah.
If you start rolling in like Dekker and he's chasing Dekker around or Harrell around.
Yeah.
Those second units, like, that's going to be a very interesting battle early on in this season between them.
Yep. The other Mavs-Rockets thing we hadn't talked about, you got two big-name veterans that I don't think either of us have mentioned yet in Deron Williams and Wes Matthews. And Wes Matthews especially is, over the course of his career, he's given Harden some trouble at times. Back when Houston played Portland in the playoffs, he was a good defender of him. Now, last year, Matthews was coming off the Achilles. I mean, he had moments, but clearly he wasn't all the way back. Matthews and Deron, have you seen anything new from them? Are they the same guys as they were last year, or are you seeing any improvement these first couple of weeks of preseason?
Wes kind of looks like a new guy. He doesn't look quite like 2014 Portland Wes, but he's not the same dude as last year.
Okay.
Last year playing, he played 33 minutes a game, and he didn't miss a game early in the season, coming off an Achilles tear, and he just never had his legs. Like, if you watched him, it was really odd watching a player who you knew would not put the ball on the deck and take it at the basket. And, like, his strength, he can compensate for a lot of stuff because he's really strong on defense. Whenever someone, like, actually steps a foot inside the arc and, like, tries to challenge him. But I'm expecting a lot better. I mean, he can't be much worse, quite honestly. he was, like, 50th in PER for shooting guards last year. And if you have a, 50th in PER level shooting guard that's catching almost 34 minutes a game, it's going to sap your offense. Like, there's no way around it. And he wasn't good last year. Like, he'll tell you he wasn't good. He was frustrated. He probably shouldn't have came back that early. And he'll admit that now, but he's a dude that wanted to, you pay me all this money, I'm going to play for it. And this year, I think he's going to have his legs. And I think he's going to attack the basket a little bit. So you can't just, stay on your toes whenever you defend him and expect him to just shoot a contested three-pointer. So I'm very excited about what Wes can give. If we get 80% of Portland Wes Matthews, I think that's a drastic improvement over what we got last year. And then Deron Williams, like, I don't know, man. He's been trying to take over, like, because the offense is so stagnant at moments. He feels like he's the guy that's, like, supposed to create this offense.
Yep.
And that's a very dangerous thing to me because his offensive go-to is, like, pull up from, like, free throw line extended.
Right.
And I'm like, that's not a quality shot. That's not a quality look. Every once in a while, he'll make a good move and go behind his back and get to the glass, and that's pretty sweet whenever he does it, but it's pretty rare as well. And he's just serviceable enough for me. Obviously, a supremely talented player, has been shooting the three a lot better this year than last year, and he's like perfectly league average to me. If you're gonna catch 30 plus minutes a night at the point guard position on a team that's, was top, I think it was 11th in offensive rating last year, but this year they might be 15 or something. Your point totals and your assist totals are going to be up there. He's not good defensively. And I don't think we'll ever see good defensive Deron Williams for the rest of his career.
Yeah, and that's where he's potentially a liability against the Rockets because despite their defensive deficiencies, certainly Eric Gordon and James Harden are both very good offensive players.
For sure. Like we don't have a point guard stopper in any way. I mean, you want to throw Bray in there? You want to throw Seth Curry in there?
Yeah.
Stopping the penetration from the top of the key is as important as denying a good look at the basket. So I don't have an answer for that. And they don't have an answer for that on their roster unless you want West to start guarding point guards. Yep.
Mike, this has been good. Let's close this out with two predictions. I'll go first. How do these two games go? The regular season games. I'm not going to ask you to pick a preseason game because come on now. But pick the two games. Do the Mavs go 2-0, 1-1, 0-2, and then over under? I'm going to give you, both teams. I'm going to say 42 wins, which is right over. Mm-hmm. Do you go over or under? For me, I'm gonna take the easy way out. I'm gonna say 1-1 on the two regular season matchups because I think the Rockets have a lot of explosion, and I think they certainly shouldn't go 0-2. However, I also think the Rockets have a lot of new pieces, a lot of defensive questions, especially without Pat Beverly, and winning a game at Dallas is probably, they certainly could do it, but it's not one that I would bet a lot of money on. So I'd count on the Rockets and Mavs to split the difference. And then as far as the season as a whole, I would go over for the Rockets just because I think there's a lot of undue pessimism based on how much they underachieved a year ago. My take is that the Rockets, they overachieved 2 years ago when they won 56 games. They were a two seed. And so that led to expectations that were, a little inflated going into last year. But they certainly underachieved last year. Last year's record, the sum of the parts was the sum of the parts just didn't add up to 41 wins. It's just chemistry. Dwight's actually, a lot of stuff was going on. I just think there's more talent in place than a 42-win team, which is what the Vegas over-under has it. So I'll pose the same two questions from you before we sign off.
I think the Rockets are going to be a healthy amount above 42 wins. I think I predicted 48 or 49 whenever we did our win total over-under. The Mavericks are going to be right around 42. I think I had 43 or 44, so I'll go over on both of those. And then, I think they'll split. And I don't know if it might be reverse order because this matchup's really weird. But I think the Mavericks, actually, they're not as talented as the Rockets, and they're not quite as deep, but they do match up really well with them. And the Rockets are going to be better over a longer period of time than the Mavericks because they're just more talented. They have a top, 5, 6, 7 player in the league. They're younger. Mm-hmm. They have more depth. But in certain matchups, Rick Carlisle is going to try and ugly it up. He's going to make you play into his hand. And they match up better with the Rockets than they do, honestly, most teams in the Western Conference now because of the addition of, Ryan Anderson. That leaves a lot of doors open from the Mavericks front. And if you don't mind, I was going to hit you with my two final Rockets questions.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
If that works for you. Okay. So each year there's always some dude on the Rockets that's super young, a sneaky good draft pick, that just pisses us off. So which one of the young guys is going to annoy me the most this season? And then what are your ideas of Clint Capella not being able to play final 4 minutes of games because of his free throw issues?
The last one is actually my biggest worry for the Rockets this year. I think you hit the nail on the head. There's so much of the NBA analytics community is so bullish on Capella because, on paper, he's a great fit with Harden. He runs the pick and roll. He's willing to do all the things that Dwight Howard wasn't. But the bottom line is if you shoot in the 30s, you're not playable late in close games. And coaches like Rick Carlisle will burn you on it. And so for all the positives, he's got to get better. Now, the Rockets aren't that worried about it because, his form is actually pretty decent. And when you look at when he went down to the D League 2 years ago, played most of his rookie year there, he shot like 60%. So they think it's going to come up, and they think that, a combination of small sample size plus a young player that's probably pressing is why he's been in the 30s. But you know what? Until he does it, it's a very viable question. So that's why I think they've been playing both Harrell and Nene a lot at center in the preseason is because there's going to be games, there's a possibility, especially early in the year, that, Capella isn't playable. It's a big drawback because you know Carlisle is not going to hesitate to do that at all. He's done it plenty with both Josh Smith and Dwight Howard the past couple of years in this matchup.
Oh, yeah.
The other one, I know he's not technically a rookie. He's close to it because he didn't play that much last year. But I'm so going to go with Montrezl Harrell being the guy that the young guy that infuriates Mavs fans because Harrell gets chippy with everyone. I don't know if you've noticed that. You know, he got suspended in the D League last year for having an altercation with another team, and then there was an official that got in the way. And you know, now he's playing center. And the flip side, of course, you know that Rockets fans hate Andrew Bogut, absolutely hate him. And I just see, I could definitely foresee at various times this year, Bogut and Harrell getting into, the kind of scrap where, no one's dirty. They're each just doing their own brand of how they play. But it's the kind of thing where, Rockets fans will despise Bogut and Mavs fans will hate Harrell because Harrell's the kind of guy that just loves to get under your skin. And he plays with, he plays with so much energy. And he's one of these guys, he'll get the dunk and he'll taunt the bench, he'll taunt the crowd, that kind of stuff. So I'll go out on a limb and say Montrezl Harrell is the next hated Rocket in Dallas.
Bogut already got a tech. He got teed up the other night against Marquise Chris because he dunked on it real good one time, and Bogut didn't like it the second time. So, yeah, I can see maybe even tomorrow night. Maybe even
we'll do it in the preseason. Yeah.
Wednesday night, might go ahead and get that out of the way.
Yeah,
honestly, I wanted the Mavericks to take Montrezl Harrell whenever they took Justin Anderson. Like, I had three dudes in there, and I think Harrell, I wanted Bobby Portis, and then Montrezl Harrell, and then Justin Anderson, and they went with my third out of three, which, only time will tell. But, I really like his game, man. He is nasty.
Yep, nasty is the word. I believe he's already picked up a TA in the preseason, had a couple of, poster dunks the other night, and which he flexed for the Memphis bench, all that kind of stuff. he's getting better, though. Question for him as a rookie, he just was not very good on the defensive end of the floor at all. But I think he's a guy that feels tailor-made for the Mike D'Antoni system. I hate these kind of comparisons. I'll say a poor man's Amari Stoudemire, and I'm certainly, because then people are going to say, well, you're saying Montrezl Harrell is Amari Stoudemire. No, I'm just talking
right.
I'm just talking loosely in terms of style of play. But, I'll say Amari with the Knicks in terms of his defensive liabilities. But if there's ever a coach that can, play up the offensive end of the floor to hide that defensive weakness, D'Antoni would be the one. So I think that's potentially a pretty good mix for the Rockets. Anyway, Mike, thank you so much. Thank you so much for the time, buddy.
Absolutely.
I guess to close out, anybody that doesn't know me, I'm Ben Dubose. I report for Sports Talk 790 in Houston. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben Dubose, and I'm the host of Locked On Rockets, which you can follow at Locked On Rockets. Mike, why don't you throw out your plugs as well?
Yeah, for sure. I host Locked On Mavericks. Obviously, you know what that is if you're listening to this.
True.
It's a daily little segment every day for you, so you can check that out. You can follow me at Machine Sports on Twitter, and I work at Sports Radio 1310 The Ticket in Dallas, Texas. You can listen to my show called Not a Podcast on 10 to noon.
I know. I love that. I love that name. I saw it earlier today. Not a podcast. A hell of a name for a radio show. Anyway,
exactly.
Mike, thanks so much for the time. I appreciate it. Looking forward to the three games, then.
Absolutely, man. Thanks so much.
Sure. So that was a new thing. It's always fun to have a Rockets-Mavs discussion that doesn't devolve into trolling, as so many seem to do on Twitter or any time you have a Houston fan or talking with a Dallas fan. Thought that was some pretty good insight. Again, that's Mike Marshall. He's the host of Locked On Mavs. If you dare listen to the Dallas side of things, he runs a really good podcast over there. He also works for 1310 The Ticket in Dallas. Anyway, I've already said where you guys can find me and the show on Twitter. All I want to mention now, you can always email us at lockdownrockets@gmail.com if you've got questions for me or if you would like to become a sponsor. And on the subject of being a sponsor, again, I want to thank SeatGeek, who is responsible for bringing this show to you today. Download that SeatGeek mobile app for the easiest way to buy tickets. And remember to use the promo code LORockets, all one word, no spacing, and you'll get a $20 rebate on your first purchase. Again, I'm Ben Dubose. This is Locked On Rockets. Thanks to all of you for listening, and I'll be back with you later this week after the Rockets take on the Dallas Mavericks on Wednesday night.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our four-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our two-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.